Hello, and welcome to the Inside EVs podcast for March the 10th, 2023. This is episode number 153. Thanks for joining us. On today's show, we'll be talking about Mercedes EQE SUV pricing, the specs of the upcoming electric mini models, and the debut of the Apex Atux AP0, and much more. I'm Don McGioni, Inside EV's editor and forum moderator, as well as the host of the new YouTube channel, Drive Electric with Dominic. Joining us today is the big timing, Mr. Tom Logney, senior editor at Inside EV's and host of the YouTube channel, State of Charge. We also have the truly magnanimous Mr. Martin Lee from the EV News Daily podcast, which is available on all the best podcast platforms. And of course, Kyle O'Connor joins us from the majestic, practically palatial halls of Out of Spec Studios, where he produces high voltage videos for a growing number of YouTube channels. Welcome, everybody.
Good morning. No, good morning. Afternoon.
Hey, guys.
And good morning to you all out there. Let's kick this thing off with what we've been driving this week and then get to some news. Tom, you finally got to do a review of an electric snowblower. I know you've been looking forward to this for a while. But before we get to that, I understand that you had an interesting exchange with artificial intelligence this week. So apparently, you are the top EV journalist in all the land. Is that right?
So, interesting thing. I just started playing around with, you know, ChatGPT just to see, you know, what it would do. And I asked it to write an article for me, you know, and of course, I told our editor in chief that I'm doing that. And he like put the cross up, was like, don't even go near that. Don't even start. We're already getting pressure to see if we can use it for this or for that or whatever. So he's like, Tom, if you're going to even do that, don't tell me about it. So I'm just playing, not that I was going to use it. I just wanted to see how well it would do on a topic that I know. You know, I asked it to write me an article on it. And so I'm just playing around like anything. It was like finding the internet for the first time. You know, right. I was asking all kind of questions. And then I just threw a question. And I said, who are the top three automotive journalists in the U.S. that specialize in electric vehicles? And it has a little list that comes. It's very hard to narrow it down. There's so many good electric vehicle journalists, but these are the three that are top of the field and well respected by their peers. And said Fred Lambert, electric. Can't really argue with that. Fred's a machine. He pumps out. I think he's written more electric vehicle articles than anybody in the last 7 or 8 years. You know, I mean, You know, I'm not talking about quality of writing or whatever. I'm just saying the guy is a machine. He has covered more things than anybody, I think. And number two, it said Tom Logney, senior editor at Inside EVs. So I was like, well, that's kind of a surprise. I certainly didn't expect to be up there. There's some fantastic journalists out there. It's nice to be mentioned, even if it was by, you know, ChatGPT. And number three, it said John Volker, which I wholeheartedly agree with. John should be number one on everyone's list. He is the consummate professional. I've followed John for a decade now. He gave me pointers and tips on writing articles 10, 12 years ago when I was just starting. And nobody does more research on a topic than John that I know of. When John writes an article, you can take it to the bank. It's not something he wrote flippantly or just, you know, needed to kill some time. He gets sources. He double checks. He's used me as sources many times. So I know he researches his topic. So it was pretty cool to be put in the list with Fred, John, and me as the top three automotive journalists in the country. Right. And so I was feeling good about it. So then I type in, describe the YouTube channel State of Charge, because I'm like, let's see what it says about my State of Charge YouTube channel. I don't know if you could pull that up, Martin, but I put the screenshot in the chat. But it starts explaining my YouTube channel, but then it says the host and creator, Kyle Connor, you know, is a well-respected automotive journalist, and Kyle is, but damn it, he's not the host and creator of State of Charge.
No.
So then after reading that, I was like, okay, I guess I can't really put much weight in them saying I'm one of the top three journalists in the automotive EV industry because they think Kyle owns and runs my YouTube channel. So I thought that was pretty funny.
Right. I think I asked it. So I read about your adventures with it last night, and because I was so already had a ton of things to do, I had to, you know, go and try it myself. And so I knew I couldn't. I was trying to figure out how I could get it to pop my name up somehow, like it did yours, but like more on purpose. So I asked it something like, "What electric vehicle journalists are also also play music or something like that?" And it's like none. So I asked him, well, what do you know about Dominic Ioni? And he says, Dominic Ioni is a journalist and editor who has written extensively about electric vehicles and renewable energy. He's currently the editor-in-chief of Autoblog Green, which which I used to contribute to Autoblog Green. That was my first gig, really. And but I was never like editor-in-chief. Like I was low on the totem over there. Sebastian Blanco, I guess, gets all that credit. Anyway, it was pretty fun to play around with.
Yeah, I thought it was fun, but
look at that. Wearing electric, silent speed, zero carbon, green revolution.
Well, it's fun to play around with, at least.
Yeah. So finally, I guess it snowed in New Jersey, and you got to try out the Snowjo 24V X2 SB22, which I guess is a 24 volt snowblower with a 22 inch cut. Like, how'd it do?
Yeah, so I got the snowblower last year to do a review, and it didn't snow after I got it. I got it like mid February, which so it's not that surprising that we wouldn't have had enough snow for me to do a storm. We usually get a lot of snow. We get over 40 inches of snow here a year in northern New Jersey. I mean, it's nothing compared to like what Kyle gets, but it's enough where we get some pretty heavy storms. Sometimes we get 2-3 feet in one storm. Not often, but it happens. So the Snowjo sent me the snowblower. They said, would you like to review it on a loan? You have to send it back. I said, yeah, sure. I'll play around with it. It sounds like fun. I got a big driveway. I could see how much it does. And I went out and bought an Ego, big two-stage, super powerful, the top of the line Ego, because now I don't have a plow anymore because I sold my Tacoma when I bought the Lightning. So I always plowed my drive. My drive is huge. It's 6,300 square feet. It's 300 feet long from end to end, and it has a big landing. So there's a lot of snow to push around. So, and now this year, all of a sudden, it doesn't snow. This is the first year we went till March without a snowstorm, which is just nuts. But I finally got a chance to do to use it and see how it worked. And so I put out a video. I said, this would be fun. Do a little, you know, kind of review video of, I never did have a snowblower, but I thought it would be fun to do. And I did it, and it actually did pretty well. It has limitations. It's not meant for a big driveway like mine, but I found that it could consistently do a little more than 1,000 square feet of surface on a single charge without having to recharge a battery. So if you had a driveway that's like a, 50 by 20, that's 1,000 square feet. So, which is a decent sized driveway. It would handle it without having to recharge the batteries. And it's not that expensive. It's $659. It's not that cheap, but it's a 1600 watt powerful motor. It blows the snow over 20 feet, distance. It's got a cutting path of 22 inches and a height of about 13 inches. So there it is right there. So it's not a huge snow blower, but price wise, it's comparable to the gas models that are that size and say that power. You could, it's pretty comparable, and people are moving away from gas snow blowers. A lot of people are, because the maintenance is a pain. You've got to winterize it. You got to drain the oil, change the plugs, and then you go to start it in the next year, sometime after a few years, and the carburetor's gummed up. You got to clean it out. And the electric power tools are fantastic because you don't have to worry about any of that. You just have to take care of the batteries, and that's it. You just drop the batteries in, you press a button, and it turns on. And it worked pretty good. So I did a little review video. Didn't put it up on Inside EVs. Not really the right topic for Inside EVs. If you're interested in seeing how that worked out, you head over to my YouTube channel, State of Charge, and it's a pretty good unit for, small to medium sized driveway, in my opinion.
Yeah, I watched that whole video. I really enjoyed it because I was curious how it would do, because in the snow that you were getting rid of, it was like all compact and heavy, and it wasn't an easy.
Right, it's not that deep. But right. What happened was it snowed for about 6 or 7 hours. We got about 5-6 inches of snow. Then it turned to rain and freeze and ice. And it tamped down the snow. So there was like an inch at the bottom of just slush. which really gives snowblowers a hard time because it's just like a Slurpee, you know? And right. So while there's only a couple inches of snow on top, the bottom is just slushy. So it was able to throw it pretty well. Just the very end where it even had gone down even more because it was raining at this point. And this was after I recharged it. So this is like 2 hours after I did the first half of it. And it did the whole top landing on my driveway. I had to recharge the batteries once. And it was like 2,200 square feet, something like that. So a little more than 1,000 square feet per charge.
They're kind of small batteries, right?
Yeah, well, they're this is, you know, my Ego batteries are like three times the size of this. They're 8 amp hour batteries. It's a 24 volt system. So right. They're really not that big. But I mean, that's what you get with that price range of an electric snowblower. If you want to get right. the things that are really much more powerful, they're well up over $1,000. The Ego snowblower that I got is like $1,600, $1,700, but it's a two stage and it could do 4 times what this can do on a single charge. And it's much more powerful, but use the right tool for the job. You know, you don't have to, if you have a 1,000 square foot driveway, you don't need a 14 horsepower, you know, 28 inch width snowblower that throws the snow across the street onto your neighbor's driveway, unless you don't like the guy, but you know, you use the right tool for the job.
Right. Hey, so I understand that you also have a video coming out about your visit to a GM's live studio. Do you want to remind us about what that is and what people can expect from that video?
Excuse me, he's
under the weather a little bit this morning.
Yeah. That's coming out probably tomorrow. It's possibly even later today, but I think tomorrow. This is a good Mark pulled up GM's new EV Live website. And we talked a little bit about it last week, but I was able to go as the first journalist they allowed inside the studio to record. And I recorded a video walking around the studio and also an interview with Haas Hassani, who's GM's VP of EV ecosystem. Basically, they created this website, EV Live, so that it's an interactive site. You log on and you can just get information yourself, like Martin's doing here. You could scroll through the pages, but then you can talk to somebody. You join a live tour. You click on that. And what happens is a representative just jumps on. And you can see them, but they can't see you. And you ask them questions, and it's really good because it's interactive. And they walk around the studio. They have chargers set up. They have vehicles set up. They have a platform, a Celestique platform there. And they can talk about how the batteries and how a dedicated platform works with EVs. They can explain architecture of EVs. It's really cool. And there's no time limit. They'll talk to you for like 2 hours. If you just keep asking them questions, they'll just walk around and just talk to you. So after I did this as part of my, because I wanted to explain what they were doing, but then I also wanted to see, kind of review it and see how well they did. When I came home, I had my friend call and I recorded it. I couldn't do it because I know they were expecting me to do it. And I talked to all the EV specialists. They would recognize my voice in a minute. So I had my friend Pete come over and sit down, and who's actually in the comment section now, I think.
Yeah.
And ask all the questions, act like he didn't know anything about EVs. Like, he's like, look, I want to go on a road trip. I don't know. Is this thing going to run out of me? How am I going to find chargers? And they explain, you know, how you find the charging stations and the difference between DC fast charging and the connectors. Make sure you use CCS connector as opposed to a CHAdeMO connector if you have a CCS enabled car. And they explain the different options that GM is going to sell for charging, what comes standard with the car, like the standard charger, and then optional chargers that'll charge quicker. You can even sit inside the GM cars and they'll do a live demonstration of the infotainment system. So they can show you how to do things. Like, you could say, I don't understand how to find, you know, the chargers or what. So, I think it's a fantastic service. Now, the devil's in the details always. We have to see how well this is implemented. They're just kicking it off. Not a lot of people know about it. I think after my video and article on Inside EVs, a lot more people are going to know about it because they really haven't promoted it that much. But this, in my opinion, is enormously helpful and necessary for new to EVs. And you don't have to necessarily be interested in a GM EV. If you call up and say, look, yeah, I'll be honest with you. I'm not really interested in what you're selling. I'm thinking about buying a Ford Lightning, and I'm confused about how it charges. they're supposed to answer your questions anyway and say, look, I wish you'd look at our vehicles, but look, I'll help you with whatever I can with that vehicle. Now, they're not subject matter specialists on competing vehicles, but they can talk about basic general charging and range and battery and things like that about any electric vehicle. So it's a good service. And I think a video I put together pretty well explains what they're doing over there exactly how to use the service if you're interested.
Cool. Well, thanks for that. And I guess we look forward to seeing more about that in the future and actually maybe trying it out in person ourselves.
I urge people to try it out. Go log on, try it out, kick the tires, try to stump them. I think that's how they'll get better. If they keep getting stumped with, if you ask them questions that they can't answer, I hope at least that they're making lists of things that they don't understand or that people ask them. Like, I'm sure I was talking to Eric Loveday last day, our managing editor here. And a customer sent us questions about adapters, about RV parks and adapting NEMA 1450s to NEMA 1430s and so forth and so on. And he was like, you think they can answer something like that? And I'm like, probably not, because now we're really getting into the weeds of that. But if they keep getting questions like that, maybe they'll expand what their topics are. So hopefully they're making lists of things they can't answer, and it'll just build a better service as we move forward. And I also hope the other OEMs do something like this too. I think it would be smart, and I think it's needed.
All right. Hey, so we missed you last week, Kyle. Are you doing all right?
Hey, doing good. Sorry, I was traveling last week.
Yeah. So while we were having a good time hanging out and catching up with Lacey of Misco Electric fame, you were on a plane headed for Florida to attend the Amelia Island Concours d'Elegance. So before we dig into that, though, as well as a special video you spent time with recently, you had a great video about 800-volt EVs experiencing slow chargers at Tesla superchargers on the Out of Spec Reviews channel that I wanted to mention. So I think people should check that out. But I was hoping you could give us a condensed version of what's going on here with the usually fast charging cars getting relatively low power from Tesla superchargers.
Yeah, well, I think our audience here to the Inside EVs podcast will totally understand this without much explanation. It was really geared actually towards a more basic audience. But essentially, Tesla superchargers are really only up to about 500 volts. They just can't really go any higher than that. So if you plug in a Lucid Air, which is a very high 800 volt system architecture, it's going to need to use its onboard booster in order to accept power at 450 volts, somewhere around there from the Tesla supercharger, and then boost the voltage up into the battery pack to actually charge. And a lot of these 800 volt system architecture vehicles have a limitation in their booster. For example, Taycan is 50 kilowatts as standard. You can option a 150 kilowatt version, but a lot of Taycans aren't optioned with it. I'd say maybe 50%. I don't know the take rate. And, same thing with Lucid, about 50 kilowatts on Lucid, maybe slightly under with some losses is about what you'll see at a Tesla supercharger. It's really the first time that in the U.S. this has been a major problem, because typically chargers that are limited to, no more than 450 or 500 volts are usually 50 kilowatt chargers, and all the boosters can pretty much handle those. So the manufacturers designed the car to fit within our current infrastructure, and everything looking forward from when these cars were designed was 1,000 volt infrastructure. It's no problem. This is not going to be an issue. And now Tesla opening up the version 3 superchargers, those are capped. And so Hyundai Kia Genesis vehicles use their rear motor's inverter. It's really actually fascinating technology. They can charge at about 100 kilowatts, but I know early Ioniq 5s are having major issues charging on the superchargers. So I would say it's not the biggest deal, but the thing is, For most high voltage EV owners, Taycan, Lucid, Hummer EV, Ioniq 5, EV6, GV60, it's going to be much better for them to go use a public DC fast charger. For example, an Electrify America or EVgo 350 kilowatt station, rather than going to the supercharger because it's going to be slower, more expensive, and just a overall worse experience with the cable length than you actually would get at a nearby public station. However, it's a nice backup to have in your back pocket. If you're traveling through, it's good peace of mind that you can get over there and get a charge. And of course, I do want to mention with Supercharger V4 coming very soon, actually pretty much almost installed in the Netherlands now. It's about to be switched on any day. I'll be flying over as soon as I can to test it out. That will go up to 1,000 volts, maybe higher. We're not sure of the exact specs, but this is a very temporary issue with V3 chargers.
Yeah, and all of the new chargers being installed with this new, the infrastructure bill, are required to support 920 volts or more. So even the Tesla chargers that get installed, that get the funds, have to be, you know, the full, you know, to support 800 volt, 900 volt battery systems.
Wow, 920 volts. I didn't know that. That's cool. Thank you. So just get back to what you've been driving. So you had a cool video. You were driving a Kia EV6 and you were going to pick up a car from a transporter. And so Ford sent you, for some crazy reason, I don't know, a Mach-E GT, but it's not just anyone. It was like the Mustang Mach-E GT with new software of some kind. So I don't know, what can you tell us about this? And it's been a while since we've really talked about the Mach-E or the Mach-E GT. And so I don't know, how do you feel about where it's at right now? It's because it's, you know, a little different now from what it was a couple of years ago when it started.
Yeah, it's had some improvements since the start of production, and it's been a few years since I've really evaluated them. I've got in and made little videos and quick tests here and there, but it was really great of Ford to send us this vehicle. It actually came to us for driver assistance testing. This vehicle has Blue Cruise 1.2, which is their newer software for ADAS. And spoiler alert on that is, lots of small improvements lead to a transformed experience using Blue Cruise. It rocks. I ran it in the Hogback yesterday. And to be totally honest, we were talking to some of the Ford engineers about this. So like, we know the Hogback, it's like not super well tuned for that. Like, you know, just like, you know, maybe do another story showing it on a straight road or something. And to be totally honest, it pretty much came first place. Smoked just about everything. The ping ponging is reduced at least 95%. It has automatic lane changes. It scooches over for trucks. It slows down for corners in advance. It's really good stuff. Now, we did a full in-depth review on every change, and we documented this, and we've also run other Blue Cruise vehicles before, so we can look at past performance to today's performance. But it's just freaking awesome. The thing is, what's not awesome is the update strategy for this Blue Cruise 1.2. And, you know, Ford notoriously is really slow with these over-the-air updates and includes very small packages in there, especially when you compare it to Rivian that gets like an update every 2 weeks that totally transforms the truck. Tesla is getting huge updates all the time. 2021 and 2022 Mustang Mach-E owners won't see this software, at least I'm told, I think I'm correct here, until starting the rollout at the end of the year.
Ooh.
Which I'm like, the software is already done, just send it to the cars. But apparently, you know, this is hard for Ford. I don't know. I really don't get that. Right. But either way, when owners do get this, they're going to be thrilled because it's truly awesome. So that's Blue Cruise 1.2. That's why the car came to us. Okay. Of course, I also did some other stuff with it because it's been a little while since I've tested Mach-E. They've improved the one-pedal driving characteristics. They've improved the brake pedal blending feel, especially in relation to working when you snap off of the accelerator pedal and hit the brakes. This was always a tough thing for Mach-E. But the things that can't be improved are hard-coded into the car. So you guys know me. I'm a performance driving enthusiast. A Mustang shows up at our office with a GT badge on it.
Right.
It's a performance car. That's how I'm evaluating it. And you get there's a couple problems going on here. The high voltage junction box, the bus bars, and the contactors all seems to be undersized for continuous load at peak power. And so what that means is you get a burst of acceleration for a few seconds, maybe under 5 seconds. And then you start getting pulled back on the available power output of the vehicle. And it's not like it recovers very quickly. You don't get 5 seconds, give it a minute, and then you're good to go. Pretty much since a first wide open throttle application, you're pretty much out of power for the rest of the drive. And so I got it down on this particular, you know, my testing route here to about 30% of available power, almost to the point where it was impossible for it to get, you know, into high double digits, nowhere near triple digits. And the thing just wouldn't accelerate. Yeah. It just fell on its face. And look, we've overheated electric cars, and every electric car we've been able to overheat. The Plaid we got to derate, you know, we get Model 3s to derate all the time. It's not unusual. What's unusual is just how undersized the components are for a performance variant of the Mach-E. It's really like the battery systems, the drive logic, everything was adapted for like a base rear wheel drive. And everyone says, some people say they think it's the inverter or derating. It's actually not. At least in looking at all of the data that I have and talking to Mustang owners who are really digging into this, it's a arbitrary derate. Same with the charging curve. This is why they have a boost to compensate for thin wires that can only handle a boost at some time with not enough temperature monitoring, the contactors and the bus bars that aren't fully monitored either. It's an algorithm that says, here's how much you can pull before we start to melt. And famously, Mach-E's were melting contactors on early versions of GTs. And so that's what I tried to do in this video. I tried to melt the contactors. I kept it pinned for as long as I could. I was hard on the car for as long as possible. And you know, basically the car did what it needed to do to protect itself. It derated power, so I didn't fuse the battery pack. And it was just a little bit of a disappointment. The braking is so much better with the new software. You guys know I much prefer GT Performance over regular GT. You get wheels, brakes, seats, suspension, so much better. So I think you just spend the extra money there. But to be honest, I didn't really see the value in this Mach-E GT trim over an extended range all-wheel drive, because it's essentially the same car, but with a little bit more peak power output and some ancillary components, but nothing major. And it rides a bit worse, and you really don't get performance for long. So I don't see spending the extra money there. GT Performance, you get mag rides, actually more comfortable.
Yeah,
I see the value going there. So anyway, small improvements over time has made the Mach-E a much better daily driver. It's very much not a performance car, and the powertrain is the main limiting factor. But when we look at the purpose as to why we were reviewing this car for Blue Cruise, it freaking rocks. I mean, for a road trip, I was like, okay, I kind of want a Mach-E just for this Blue Cruise system. Like, can I put it in something that charges well, you know, and then use that as a road tripper? It's really awesome.
Kyle, Anthony C wants you to drive his GT and fry it so he can get a new box.
That would actually make a great video. If you can bring the car here to Colorado, we'll take it out to High Plains Raceway and we will make sure we fry the junction box. That'd be a fantastic video. So if you want that, send it out, and then hopefully Ford will warranty it after seeing it getting shredded around the track. The problem is you really can't even go that fast once it derates. Like, it really falls on its face.
Interesting. Okay. But that's something to keep in mind. I mean, it works fine for, you know, most situations. And when you drive as a performance car, like, you're getting good speeds and you're climbing there in the mountains. So you're definitely, you know, putting it to the test.
I mean, yeah, but like at the same time, you take Polestar 2 up the same road, way harder, way faster, Polestar 2 performance, and it doesn't even derate at the top. Like, I had to take the Polestar out to the runway to overheat it. And that just sustained full power pretty much the whole way. Model 3, same thing. You know, that's not a long enough road. There's not enough wide open sections where Model 3, I can get to derate just at the top. And so, I would say for the next version of Mach-E, we know what they can improve. It's right in front of us. Just make it, you know, oversized, beefy, and let the thing rip, because the battery pack can do it. Battery's huge.
So generally, just talking about the Mach-E, just in general, not necessarily the GT, but so Ford is planning on increasing its production of this to like some crazy numbers. I'm just kind of look up the exact number right now. So do you think the market is there for this car?
Totally. I just think, you know, go for the lower lower end versions personally.
Sure.
I don't think anyone should look at Mach-E if they're thinking about doing track days or canyon blasting. It's just not built for that. The GT Performance has the suspension to do it. It just doesn't have the powertrain. For daily driving, though, Mach-E is fine. It's got a lot of range. They put big batteries in there. They don't charge particularly well, especially when compared to their competition, because you get this arbitrary peak, and then it kind of falls on its face and sits at about 120 kilowatts, where like an EV6 or IONIQ 5 would sit at 240 kilowatts. And so, yeah, I mean, certainly most EV buyers, new EV buyers, won't even look into this level of detail. They'll see a car that looks really nice, that's built really well, that's relatively comfortable. It's a stylish vehicle. And they'll say, hey, it does 240 miles or it does 310 miles, depending on the spec, whatever version you get. And that's, you know, that's all they need. And, you know, yeah, Mach-E Vlog said LFP batteries are coming. This is the key. For a daily driver, LFP is the answer. And they really have to work on their preheat strategy for DC fast charging, their preconditioning strategy. Right now, it's really annoying. You have to be like 18 miles or less from a charger, which means at highway speeds, you only get, what, 12 or 15 minutes, depending on how fast you're going, of preheat. And with I noticed, and also others commented on the forums, with cabin temperature on, you barely get any heat to the battery pack. You got to like freeze your ass off in the car, turn off cabin climate, and then you can get some significant battery heating. So they really need to work on their thermal strategy if they're going to do LFP, because it hates to charge when it's cold.
Right.
Well, the LFP is only going to be available on standard range battery packs, not on extended range.
Right. Right. So, absolutely.
You know, that's something to consider. Who knows in the future, but at least initially, that's going to be the breakup, and you won't have an option. If you get standard range starting now, I think starting like next month, all standard range Mach-E's and all standard range Mach-E's will be LFP. All extended range will be the NCM. And then starting, I think the end of this year or early next year, that's going to be the policy with Lightnings. All standard range Lightning LFP, extended range gets the LFP.
It's the best strategy. Love that idea. I'm a huge LFP fan. My dad bought a Model 3 standard range LFP, and I've been talking to him about it. And he just full charges that thing all the time, gives no care in the world. He's like, it needs a lot of preconditioning time to a supercharger, but it's just your care of the battery goes to zero pretty much.
I guess we should mention that on the Aerospec Dave YouTube channel, that's Kyle's dad, he has a whole video of charging, I think, 0 to 100, the Model 3 standard LFP from this week, I believe. So it's a fresh video.
Yep, he just put that video up. He did a couple tries. The second try is the more accurate one.
Right on. All right, so we were saying that you went to Amelia Island, Concours d'Elegance. And so you made a great video there. I mean, of every electric car on display at the Amelia Island Concours. I'm just going to say it again because I love saying it. Concours d'Elegance.
I see you like saying that. I hate the name.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, I think it's way too fancy.
Okay.
It's a fancy event.
It's supposed to be. It's a semi-fancy event, though, right?
Yeah. So like, I couldn't wear a sweatshirt, which I thought was a bit ridiculous.
Yeah, you're all dressed up, buttons on your shirt and everything. Collar.
I know. I dressed up for the people at Amelia.
That looked good. What did you see? What caught your eye? You got to see the Lyriq in person. I believe that's what you're looking at there, right?
Lyriq was unfortunately slightly underwhelming, if I'm honest.
Sure, yeah. No, be honest.
Yeah, I mean, I usually am too brutally honest. It doesn't do anything for me. It never has. And looking at it in person still doesn't do anything for me. That doesn't change my evaluation of the car when I'm able to test it. You know, it'll be interesting to see how it does. But Dominic, you and I were talking this week about it, and we were like, it looks really nice visually on the interior. And then you start touching stuff and it's like, ugh.
Right. See, that's why I'm like, spend a grand on, why not have aluminum, vent knobs and things, you know, why plasticky stuff? We don't need metal coated. People want a premium car. They want premium touch, not just premium looks, you know?
Yeah. And actually we had a little thought. I was talking to Anna about this, and we're like, you know, Tesla actually felt nicer to us. Maybe it's a generational thing than the Lyriq. And I think the reason is the Lyriq was pretending to be something it's not. it says, I'm pretending to be a luxurious Cadillac. But when you start touching stuff, you're actually like, ah, it's, I'm really not. But with a Tesla, it's like, I'm not trying to be nice. I'm just an iPad with wheels. But we kind of appreciate that because it just is what it is. The charge port door on this looked like it was about to fall off, by the way. Every time I would open it, it was
this. So it won't. Okay. So at the first drive, like first drive, it did that same thing, the little shutter when it was opening. And I was told that the software would fix that, but not on this model, at least.
Look, I don't know.
Hopefully the production model is a little bit better than that. I guess I need to see if I can find one online. So there must be some online, right?
Here are the things that the Lyriq needs to do for me to get excited about it. It needs to have a kick-ass sound system, which they claim it does, but it really needs to be good because I sampled one of their reference ones in the Escalade V recently, and I wasn't like totally blown away. It's nowhere near like a Meridian in a Range Rover. And then it needs to have big range and good efficiency. And then it also needs to charge unbelievably well. We already know Super Cruise is awesome, but Super Cruise doesn't allow for lane centering on non-pre-mapped highways, which is annoying. And so, you know, there's some things that this thing needs to do to kind of win me over and get past the initial impression. But I would say that was probably the least impressive one there. The one that I actually really thought was cool was the Celestiq. I thought that was kind of cool.
I was surprised you seemed to like that more than I expected you to.
I know, but it's a halo car, and every brand deserves a halo car. And I thought it had such good presence, and
it's long, really, right?
Nothing else like it on the road.
It's so long.
It's long. It's cool. It's what Cadillac should be.
Right.
And so I was really pumped up about this thing. I don't really know any of the specs on it. I've never really researched it, but just loved the presence that it had.
Looks cool. I mean, I wonder if that trunk is that. So if you're going to use like for actually like getting groceries and things, I don't know if you get groceries in your Celestiq or you have somebody to do that for you, but because this is meant for people with, you know, money, like with a capital M, right?
Yeah, but they got to get groceries too. Everyone's got to eat. So they'll just put groceries in their Celestiq at Whole Foods.
Right. It just seems like the loading floor. So the way the back opens up, that rear glass comes up. Does the hatch fold down as well?
Or you know, I didn't explore it too much because that guy was yelling at me off camera for opening the trunk. So kind of ignored him and continued along. So I was like, oh, okay, let's get out of here.
Right.
It was pretty funny.
Oh, then you saw the Buick Wildcat. That's right. That's a concept, which you're famously not a fan of concepts. But did you like that?
No.
Really?
Okay. Yeah, nothing about it.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay. I like that wraparound glass on the front. I just like a lot about it.
It's not going to make it to production like that.
Right. Well, I mean, hopefully a lot of those elements will, but...
No.
Yeah.
It's going to look like the worst Buick you can imagine when they get it through the GM bean counters. Then what else was there? ID Buzz. I got to drive the ID Buzz around Florida.
Right.
That was so cool. We're just cruising around Florida in a Buzz. Right. That's amazing.
That was Euro spec. So that was like a short wheelbase?
Yeah. It was a Euro spec, had the Type 2 charging port. They were using a little adapter to charge it, which was really funny. And it was great. Great to see the Buzz on our shores. It'll also be in Texas this week at South by Southwest. I'll be heading there. In a couple days on a road trip, which should be interesting. And so
you're coming through Tallahassee, right?
Yeah. So I, got a car in Florida and driving it to Texas and then bringing it back to Colorado. So,
okay. Is it electric car?
No, nothing that anyone would be interested in here.
Okay. So speaking about the ID Buzz real quick, I just wanted to mention that the long wheelbase has been confirmed for US debut this summer in California.
Oh yeah.
So I'm looking forward to that because you were saying, I think that you thought the short wheelbase was enough bus, but I think maybe it's just my American or whatever state of mind. I like the idea of like the long wheelbase, like lots of room inside for camping or hauling gear, you know, like this. I think this is going to be a super popular vehicle if at least. Well, the price is going to put it out of range for a lot of people that really want it, but this, I think it's still going to have a good amount of popularity. I don't know. What are your thoughts?
Totally agree. Can't wait for it. You know, I'll take a standard wheelbase. If I had the choice, I'd probably go long wheelbase because, you know, as much versatility as possible.
Talking
to some of the Volkswagen guys, they were kind of like, it looks better. So I'm excited to see what comes from this. And hopefully bigger battery. The thing needs a bigger battery for our market. It just needs 100 kilowatt hour pack or somewhere around there, because it's just a brick, and you know, on the highway, you're going to be lucky if you get 150 miles out of the standard one.
Wow. Does it give you the efficiency rating when you're driving it around?
You can pull up all of your trip data. Yes.
Okay. All right. So let's come back down. What else we have? I've put my notes way of line here. Right. So anything else at the meet of the island that you want to mention besides the Porsche 959s?
Oh, right. Well, that's for a different podcast, but I was just losing my mind. 7 959s in a row. Right. One of my dream cars. So cool. And then Polestar Roadster. I hate concepts, right, but I like this one. So let me have my one that I like. This was awesome.
This is going to be close to the production version. I don't think there's going to be a lot of changes, right?
The Polestar guys were like, it's going to look like this.
Right. Yeah. And I saw you did a size comparison, because for me, it's kind of hard to judge the size of the thing, right? It's right at the very end of your video, I believe. It's really hard to judge the size of it. I think you said it was like not quite as long as the 911, but longer than a 718.
Yeah. It's like in between a 718 and a 911, somewhere around there. So it's not huge, but the size isn't going to stop anyone from buying it. It's a 4-seater, it looked like to me. So I thought that was interesting.
Two plus two.
Yep. Two plus people with no legs in the back.
Right. I mean, yeah. Was it really tight?
Yeah. I don't think you or I would fit in the back of that thing.
Okay. It's two doors though, right?
Two doors.
Okay. So like a regular gas Mustang with a back seat.
Yeah, something like that. But it just looks awesome. You know, the thing with this car is the tech specs aren't there. It's not a, you know, crazy, you know, 1,000 horsepower Tesla Roadster killer. This is like, I think, just all about appreciating the design and the experience and the feel and the, you know, what motoring is about. Just enjoy the drive without thinking about specs on paper. Really just absolutely love the whole concept. It's very expensive. I kind of like the exclusivity, and hopefully if they keep production low, the values will stay high in the secondary market. If the secondary market values tank, guess who will be getting one? Just super cool. Looking forward to this. What other cars were there? There were BMW i7 was there. I was at the unveil of the new X5 plug-in hybrid, the facelift. They didn't ruin that car, which was good. Drove the buzz around. It was just an awesome week, and really enjoyed the whole event, as I do every year. It's one of my favorite events of the year.
Right. Right on. Well, thank you for that. So what else? We got on notes here. We have, I guess this is my turn. I'm supposed to talk about what I've done this week. So I've been driving my car. Everything's going well. I haven't really been driving a lot. It's just my normal day-to-day, you know.
Share what your car is. The audience may not know.
Oh, that's true. So I bought a used Tesla Model 3 in Chicago a few weeks ago with 44,000 miles on it. So this week, actually, I posted the video, my used Tesla Model 3 road tripping from Illinois back to Florida. And that's up there live now, and you can check that out. It took me a while to get this one up there. There was a lot of editing and stuff to do. And I ended up even actually putting, you know how you put, so I have like free software. I don't have like nice software yet, but you can put over these like traveling montages, you put music. I couldn't find anything that worked. So I ended up, you know, sitting here with my guitar and like doing little, little things. I have these little things I've been playing for years, just, you know, they're not whole songs, they're just little snippets of things. And so that's up in that video. I enjoyed that. And I also, last weekend, we had a thing here called Veg Fest. I guess it's like a little thing in Tom Brown Park. It's a big park where we have vendors with different food items and handicrafts, et cetera. So as part of that, we had a local organization. It's called Sustainable Tallahassee Ride Electric Club organized an EV expo so people could come up, show their cars. And also there was an organization giving rides in a Tesla Model 3 for anyone who wanted to try that out, as well as the Nissan dealer in town had an Ariya and a Nissan Leaf there for people to try out. So that was pretty cool. I went around and talked to a lot of the different owners about their cars. There was a lady there with Linda with the Chevy EUV, and she is a big Kyle Connor fan, out of spec fan. And
she's an out of spec fan, but then bought a Bolt.
Sure. I mean, for her, the EUV, she doesn't drive a lot anyway.
Sure. And great. We've been recommending them. That was just a joke, but yes.
Okay. And she replaced her Subaru with it. And she, told me all about it. She was great. She was pretty knowledgeable, and because she watches you, I guess. And maybe she does other research as well. I'm sure she does, actually, because she had the buying process for this down. She explained it all to me. She was a little camera shy, but she explained, how she got this car, how she found it. And it's in the best Bolt color.
Yep. That's a great color.
Yeah, I love that. It's like my Chevy Spark EV color. Yeah. So that video is up there on the Drive Electric with Dominic YouTube channel.
Cranking it too. Over 1,000 subscribers. Hopefully at 4,000 watch hours soon. And so just let the videos play in the background so Dom can get monetized.
Right. Yeah. So hopefully we'll be making some videos tomorrow. I don't know if you come through town, maybe we can, I'm not sure what we can do. I have to do an FSD. So my car came with full FSD beta, but I have not activated it yet. And I'm not sure. I know. Well, I wanted to do it on video and I need, it's just.
Well, I'll bring the GoPros if you want to do it together.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking, but I'm not sure if I'm going to be allowed to do it because there's like a recall on it, right?
No, if your car already has it, you keep it.
Okay. So so I guess I'm going to do it in the morning, and then I'll film activating it, and then
don't update your car. And no, I'm joking. You'll be able to keep it. I'm not sure of the schedule yet. I'm supposed to leave West Palm at like 3 to 4 p.m., and I'm just going to hammer up there. It's likely going to be Sunday morning by the time we can film.
Right, yeah. That sounds like Sunday morning.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. That's cool.
Tom, have you stringed out the charging problems yet?
I have not. So I do have an AC. I believe it's an issue with the AC onboard charging or some other component in line with that. That's derating my charging. So I'm not getting full amps. So that's something I still need to look into.
Well, I'm charging at like 16 amps, right, I think.
Right, but it is charging, and I haven't been driving that much, so it hasn't really been an issue for me, like personally.
Yeah, but don't wait till it's an issue to fix it.
Right. It's just a matter of I wanted to get it all on film and do all that stuff. So maybe I should do that tomorrow morning, actually.
And that was kind of important. We noticed your car was actually showing at the dealership in Ohio.
Or right, Eagle Eyes here. That warning message flashed on the screen in my footage for like a second maybe. And you caught that. And so now I know the problem isn't my house. It's actually the car. Because at first I thought maybe, because the message was something about the voltage of the house or something.
We'll take a look at it. It could be as simple as a charge port. It could be the onboard charger failing. But either way, we'll do some exploring. We'll go around town and try some different level twos and see what they do.
Someone is asking. Oh no, sorry. I thought someone asked me a question here. Oh yes.
What trim level did you get? You didn't say which version of Model 3.
Right, it's a rear-wheel drive Tesla Model 3 long range, I believe.
Yeah.
But now I'm looking. I'm confused because now the long range, the rear-wheel drive cars aren't long range. But
yeah, so but they no longer offer your trim.
Right. I need to do the whole 70 mile an hour, range test just to see what's going on though. Just so I know what's happening, like what's capable of. But first I need to sort out the AC charging issue. So that's going to have to wait until maybe next weekend.
You really need to do that, like a range test like that for us. Not so much to see how far it'll go. As far as I'm concerned, I want to see how much battery capacity you have, because right. That's going to really show you how many kilowatt hours. If you fully charge it and then drain it completely down in one draw, you'll get a really good idea of what you have. I mean, you could also, I guess, tap into like Teslafly or a service like that. I think those they don't have good diagnostics, Kyle.
No, because you rely on BMS, so it's not totally accurate.
Okay, yeah. Well, the best way to do it is drive it until it won't go any further. Now you know exactly how much capacity you have available.
Yes. Right. And that's the plan.
There's also an internal health test that would make an interesting video, Dom. And I think on recent software, it's less buggy. Like I tried it on my Model 3 and it freaked out. I'm going to redo it again soon at some time. That would make a great video. But I think we'll film a couple videos on Sunday together, maybe one for our channel, a couple for yours. And we'll go try out a whole bunch of level twos, fix your AC charging. We'll do FSD for the first time and, maybe do an efficiency test of some kind at different speeds. Who knows? We can always come up with stuff.
All right. Well, Sunday sounds like a fun, good time. That's awesome. So let's dig in. Where's your time? Oh, yeah. Let's dig in some news.
Can I interrupt really quick?
Sure. Yeah,
there's just one more car I've been driving that I know I just want to talk about to get it out of the way,
please.
Which is the Kia EV6 GT. And so I've been driving this for the last couple weeks, actually. And it is very interesting. So there's basically the EV6 Wind, which is sort of the base entry level one. There's also like a small battery thing, but basically Wind, GT Line, which are just the styling bits, and then the full GT. The full GT is like big motors, you know, great adaptive suspension, and full like crazy mode. The thing is, and I'm actually going to do most of the testing on the car just after this podcast, that car is very sensitive as to when it's going to give you full power. So it has like bucket racing seats and, you know, you have a great seating position. You sit on the ground. It's really awesome looking car, I think, and driving car. But unfortunately, like if you're below 70% state of charge or the battery's even slightly cold, it like derates to what a normal EV6 would do. And I think it's just that little battery pack. It's only 77 kilowatt hours, I think somewhere around there is like at its maximum. So there's like a maximum power output mode that you have to start the car above 70% state of charge. It warms the battery up and then it gives you full power. It's a little bit weird drivetrain. Like I've been driving it a bit like an idiot around town and I'm full sideways around every corner in a cloud of smoke and it's awesome. But it's very front motor biased. So like you kind of have to get the car set and then like go half throttle to upset the balance. But anything past half throttle, it honestly just roasts the front tires. Like it has an oversized front motor and it needs a bit more on the back, in my opinion. But I haven't driven it with the full power activated yet. I'm going to do all that today. But it's been very awkward driving it around because like sometimes I'll want to go, you know, just a little angle pulling around a corner. And then I go a little bit too much throttle and then the front inside tire just spins to the moon.
Really?
It's really a bit weird to control, actually. There's also a drift mode that I haven't been able to get it into, I think because the car's been at such low state of charge. So I don't know. I got to do some stuff. We're also going to be doing a full range test on this car. The efficiency seems horrible, really bad. I mean, it might be tied for the worst out there, at least in this category.
So it's looking Hummer bad.
Well, I drove around town yesterday, just a normal drive for me. And I went to Starbucks and back and got 1.2 miles per kilowatt hour.
Ooh.
Which I didn't know was possible to get that bad. So, but that was just, you know, battery heating running, cabin heating on full, couple hard accelerations, nothing crazy. But like a Model 3, I know if I drove my Model 3 Performance in the same thing, I would have gotten at least twice the efficiency. You know, I could see that maybe getting 450 watt hour per mile. And here I was at about 800 something watt hour per mile. Crazy. Yeah.
And this is very new to the market, this trim level too, right? The GT.
Yeah. I haven't seen one on the roads yet, but I'm actually thinking about getting the Ioniq 5N, which is the sister car to this, should be the same underpinnings. I like the Ioniq 5 a bit better. That's going to have even worse efficiency. We can imagine. But we'll see. We're going to run it in the range test. Monday is going to be a beautiful day. So we've selected that day to do the range test on this and the Mach-E GT. They're going to be run on the same day. I won't be here. I'll be in Texas, but Ryan and Max are going to do it. We're not going to do it as a comparison because the Mach-E has a much larger battery pack, but it'll be interesting to see both videos, you know, for those eagle-eyed viewers filmed on the same time. So overall, just to sum up this car, built really well. I really love everything about it. I like that you have to be a bit of a nerd to kind of get everything out of the car. It's not going to be good for the general user. It's like the guys who have Androids who like download apps, you know, and do all this stuff away from the iOS world. That's this car, because you manual control over everything and it's not very intuitive.
iOS, baby.
Yeah.
Android.
Well, you know, I live in my little Apple and Tesla ecosystem, but I really have been impressed with when you get it right, it's good. And the chassis is so oversteer. I mean, this thing's a drift monster. Going around off ramps, I'm just like, what? Full sideways, big smoke everywhere. And then you just drive normally and no one thinks it's you because you're driving an electric SUV.
Right. All right. So let's dig into some news, I guess. So the price of the built in America Mercedes-Benz EQE SUV has been announced. It starts at $77,900. That's including this. No, $77,900. It doesn't include destination. $79,050 includes destination. So that's just below the $80,000 cap for the IRA federal tax credit. Compared with the slightly bigger EQS SUV, that starts at $104,400. It seems like a pretty decent deal. So buyers of the lowest trim might only shell out $70,400 before destination and tax. So that's like a $34,000 difference between the EQE base and the EQS base SUV. So I think Mercedes is going to sell a lot of the base ones because that's just a big gap and probably a pretty decent deal. We'll get your opinions on that in a moment here. I feel like people buying these cars in this price range, though, are traditionally care less about the absolute price and more about value for money. So there should be a fair amount of takers for higher trims, too, I think. Maybe we can get that graphic, Martin, of the price thing. I think it's actually at the bottom of this. Yeah. So, Kyle, so what's your take on this price? And what do you think about them charging the same money for the rear-wheel drive as the all-wheel drive version?
Yeah, that seems really weird, doesn't it? But obviously they're gaming the tax credit situation.
Right.
And so they're really trying to get you in there for that. And you know what? It's going to be hugely popular in those trims. I think this, and I've been able to play around with it. I've sat in it, touched it, been around this car. I think it's the best Mercedes EQ to date. Really love the size. I love the features. I think it actually, for the first time, looks good for a Mercedes EQ. And especially when you get the right wheels on it. We haven't seen base trims yet. I'm not sure how those will look, but perhaps they're out there and I just haven't seen the photos. But you know, you got to get the wheels that they show in the launch photo. I'm sure that'll put you over the tax credit cap. So
I'd say get the base and then add the wheels afterwards yourself.
Yeah, but do you know how expensive Mercedes wheels are afterwards? It could be the difference of the tax credit.
Oh.
They're crazy. So you know, get the base one. But wow, I think that's going to be the move. It's just going to be comfortable. It's not going to be fast. We've driven this drivetrain in normal EQE. It's a little bit of a weird car from a powertrain architecture and battery pack architecture because it's such low voltage. It's like 320 or 330 volts nominal. So in order to achieve the 170 kilowatt charging speed, it pretty much needs 500 amps. So these things have to plug into a 350 kilowatt charger just to get 170 kilowatts.
Wow.
And so I think that's a bit of a shame.
One of the things I noticed here with the prices that's interesting, take a look at the exclusive package for the rear-wheel drive and all-wheel drive. Same model where it's the same pricing. Look at the price. It's $80,000 exactly. Nobody has brought this up, including Dan, who wrote this up for Inside EVs. The new federal tax credit is you get the federal tax credit as long as it doesn't cost more than $80,000.
Right.
So I think both the premium and exclusive will qualify for the full tax credit or the tax credit as long as you don't get any options.
Yes.
I hadn't seen anybody brought that up. Everybody seemed to write and say the base model that's, you know, $77,900 will qualify. But I think the premium and exclusive will qualify as long as you don't get any options.
And that's that gives you the driver assistance package, including automatic lane change.
Yeah.
Active
ambient light. I'm really considering this. I have the R1S on order, and that was my plan all along to sell one of the pickup trucks and get the R1S. That'll be my wife's primary vehicle. But now I'm really thinking about going down to a Mercedes dealership and talking to them about this, the EQE SUV, and just bagging the R1S, because I can't even get an estimated delivery window yet. It's still just, you know, says processing. So I don't know when that's going to come. And if I can get an exclusive, and it will with base with no options, and it'll qualify for the $7,500 federal tax credit, that's the play for me, I think.
Yeah, I totally agree. That would be great for Meredith to cruise in and out of the city if she needs to. That's awesome.
Yeah.
I mean, but she likes the R1T though, right? She likes that ride. She does. Like that kind of tight.
100%. You don't think she'll like the EQE SUV?
Well, I don't know. It's a little posher, a little softer. I mean, I don't know. I'm not sure what we know what she likes exactly. So.
Yeah, well, we'll check it out. But this has me really thinking about of more than 80,000. And why did Mercedes price that at exactly 80,000? It's so close. The premium and the exclusive pricing is so close. You usually don't see that. There's usually a little bit more wiggle room between models, but exclusive is 80,000. And there you go right there. The retail price of more than 80,000. And this is not more than 80,000.
Yeah, they did that purely to gain the tax credits, and it's such a smart move. And this is the EQ to have, in my opinion. I can't wait to do some testing with it. I actually think it'll be efficient. It should have a front axle disconnect because they use two permanent magnet motors. So I'm not sure if it's in the 350 or just the AMG versions that are coming, but I know that there will be a front axle disconnect launching with this.
I believe this one does too.
Yeah, nice.
Yeah. Yeah, I was reading about that last night. I read about the disconnect, and I didn't see it for a special trim level or anything. So I think they all get that.
Right. That's going to be really interesting to try out because the cars already go really far in a charge. And we haven't done a range test on EQS SUV, but I did spend some time with it, and I was really impressed with the efficiency. You know, Mercedes is taking their own approach to electric cars, and it's kind of working, especially with the SUV versions.
I think Mercedes is a bit of like a stealth player in the EV market. You know, it's kind of quiet over here because, I mean, they're at the upper end of the market, so they're not huge numbers yet either. But you know, they're planning on, they have a very aggressive electrification strategy. You know, they want to be all electric by 2030. Is that right? I think, which is not that far away. So yeah, and the products. You know, they have some good engineering going on. I think they're doing pretty good. Yeah. Okay. So, let's move along, I guess. The Mini brand has a single EV on the market right now, the affordable Cooper SE, and that we have a big owners group in the Inside EVs forum for that car. But the so it only has 114 miles of EPA range, though. But they will soon be building electric minis on a new platform, and the specs and the number of electric models is set to see some nice improvements. So according to info shared by the head of Mini, that's Stephanie Wurst, she was talking to the British publication Autocar and spilled the beans on the some of the powertrains and specs of the three models they're expanding to coming up in the near future. So let's start with the Mini Cooper. We call it the Cooper SE. I think they have a little slightly different naming schemes for in different markets. I believe, Martin, they call it the Mini Cooper Hatch or something over there.
Okay. Yeah.
Okay. So this is going to be made in China by the BMW joint venture with Great Wall Motor called Spotlight Automotive, and built on a platform that they've developed there. It's going to be a bit wider than the current model, but at the same length and I think the same roof height. But it will have more power, so 215 horsepower compared to today's 181 horsepower. It also has two battery options, a 40 or 54 kilowatt hour pack. And the smaller one has almost 100 miles more of WLTP range, 240 miles compared to 145 WLTP miles of today's current 32.6 kilowatt hour battery. The big battery, the 54 kilowatt hour, should get around 290 miles of WLTP range, maybe a bit more, I think. Curiously, in the UK, where the price is only going up by £1,000 for this, so a lot of improvements, only a, you know, slight price adjustment. That's £1,000. That's like close to $1,300 US, I believe. So, and we also learned that a John Cooper works, that's the spicy one version, is coming in mid 2025 for that, with a bigger battery and more powerful motors. So I wanted to talk just a bit about the other two real quick, a summation, and we can get into some details because there's some big questions around this. So Mini will have three electric models in the near future, and the 2024 Countryman is the next to have an electric version. This is the SUV of Minis, so to speak. It's got four doors. It's going to be built in Germany on the FAAR platform that it's currently, it will share it with the BMW iX1, also the BMW, what do you call it, the small one? The X1? Yeah. The small SUV. It's supposed to be a bit bigger than today's Countryman, which will allow a third model, the Aceman, to slot between this and the Cooper. So this is also going to get two battery options. It's got the 54 kilowatt hour battery, plus it gets a 64 kilowatt hour battery. The entry level version puts out 188 horsepower from a single motor. And a dual motor version, the only all-wheel drive Mini, will increase that to 268 horsepower, which sounds pretty proper. No range figures yet, but the big battery should do about 272 miles about on WLTP. That's what the BMW X1, how do they say that again? The iX1, right. So yeah, no range figures on that, but we think 272 miles. So finally, the 2025 Aceman will be available only as electric. The other two have gasoline versions. And it's going to be built in China as well by Spotlight. We'll have the same 40 and 54 kilowatt hour battery options as the Cooper. The entry level version puts out 188 horsepower, and the higher trim has the same 215 horsepower as the Cooper. Range is said to be 249 WLTP miles. So that's a lot of numbers. But maybe the question, the bigger question is, are any of these coming to the US? So, Kyle, you're a Mini fan from way back. The Mini has a bit of a cult following, but can the brand compete in the U.S. if it's not built here and eligible for the tax credit? And that's not to mention the added cost of tariffs for the two models built in China.
Yeah, you know, well, I think first let's touch on the Mini enthusiast point. Sure. I think Mini has done a very poor job of maintaining their culture as time has gone on. You know, the early 2000s, 2005, 6, 7, maybe up to about 2013 or 14, we really saw the strong Mini culture. There was, you know, just so much enthusiasm around the brand. And as new models come out, everyone gets upset. When the R56 generation came out, everyone's like, ah, oh, the Mini's ruined. When the F56 came out, ah, oh, the Mini's ruined. And now it's like, oh, we like this one. Don't come out with the new one. So there's always this resistance to change a little bit in the Mini world. And so that's going to happen with the launch of this new generation. By the way, it's very overdue. The F56 generation Mini is one of the longest running current generations of any BMW product. It's just run since 2014, I think, was the first model year. We're rolling up on 10 years now. Typically, BMW is 7 years max. Right. So it's really getting a little bit long in the tooth. But they've done a good job of making them look great, and I enjoy them, and I love the current electric Mini. I think there's a lot here to be skeptical of. I'm not sure I like the idea of Mini going full Chinese oriented. You know, I don't know what that means for material usage, for quality, for driving dynamics. I feel like Mini is outsourcing more. The more they outsource, the more the brand gets diluted and loses its, you know, core, you know, British heritage, if you will. And with the Countryman, I'm not sure that's going to be enough of a battery pack to really make it a, you know, usable SUV. The thing with Minis are they're never really that cheap. They're always... it's always been small but premium car. And so that makes it a harder sell to say, hey, let me just get an extra one to put in the garage. You know what I mean? Like, it's like you still need something else for the road trips. At the price point that Countryman's going to come in, which is going to be deep into the $50,000 range with no tax credits, just my guess. That's a tough sell to say, hey, this is my only car, which these are designed to be. and have limited range, potentially limited charging. We're not totally sure.
I'm guessing 230 miles of EPA range.
And it's like, you know, 60 something kilowatt hour pack. Like, we're getting annoyed with Ioniq 5 EV6 GV60's range with another 12 or 13 kilowatt hour usable on top of that. And we all know, you know, BMWs have been magically efficient, but I'm not sure how well that's going to transfer over to Countryman, which is just a brick in terms of aero design. They've never been particularly efficient. So I don't know. I think it's certainly not going to be a big hit off the bat, would be my prediction. And okay. I actually think there's going to be a little bit of a cult following for the existing Mini Electric, which is the F56 based one with the i3 drivetrain just swapped backwards. I love this generation Mini. It's not perfect, but it's okay, because when things aren't perfect, they have a bit of character to them, and that's the point of Mini. So I worry, and I've always kind of joked about people who worry about the future of the Mini brand, because it's a brand I've been closely following almost my whole life. And I've owned classic Minis, I've owned modern Minis, you know, I love it. But I think, I don't know, this is the first time where I'm like, holy crap, this might be the last new Mini we ever see.
P-Glass says, I think BMW is wringing money out of UK government for the Cowley Oxford plant to go EV. Have you heard any rumblings about that, Martin?
Yeah, I think the UK government gave them £75 million in some kind of incentive, or I don't know, the tax breaks, or you know how these things work. I'm not sure exactly what it was. The number was 75 million, but it was badly needed, I think, because I don't think BMW care where their cars are made. I think they'll go where they get the best deal. And I don't know if too many customers care where they're made, China or the UK. It just depends what the car costs. And if you can get a federal tax credit, you know, then it should be made in the US, because at that price point, $7,500 is a huge amount of money. So that's the price is the only Chinese thing that I think people care about, not so much the origin of the vehicle.
Yeah, I think a lot of owners, potential owners, wouldn't even know that it was made in China. You know, they'd say that it was a Mini, and they don't even care about the point of origin. A lot of people. But besides the federal tax credit, Martin, the real problem, and Kyle brought this up, is the extra tax comes from being made, the ones that are at least made in China. So right. It's not just a $7,500 price swing. You'd lose $7,500, and then you pay, it's almost 30%, right? I think on cars imported from China. If it's a let's say it's a base $30,000 car, that's a $9,000 tax on top of it, import tax. Then you lose the $7,500. So now, you know, you're looking at, it's like a $15,000 penalty on a small car that can't be that expensive. So I think Kyle's right when he said, you know, looking at $50,000, maybe close to $50,000, and with no tax credit, compare that to the cars it will be competing for and fighting for market share with. And it's not going to fare well. I mean, I don't think they'll even bring it to the US in that case. At least the model that's made in China, we might just never get it.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. Like, how can, I mean, Polestar does it, right? The Polestar 2 is built in China, and they sell in the US, but it's, you know, not cheap. But yeah, I don't know. I guess we'll have to see. We'll find out pretty soon. That's all coming up. Yeah, hopefully we'll see the reveal of these things pretty soon, because they're still all covered in camouflage. And I think I'm going to like the styling updates that's coming, but that's a whole subjective area. So let's move on to I'm sure this would be very popular. So this was actually at Amelia Island, Concours d'Elegance. But you saw it. You didn't really see it there, Kyle, because it was covered in a shroud the time you were there. But the company Apex Motors, which offers a combustion sports car built on a carbon fiber chassis, has debuted the production version of the AP0 at the Amelia Island Concours d'Elegance, with some help from the musician Wyclef Jean. Now, this first debuted as a concept car a couple of years ago, but I don't see the difference. Like, it looks like the same car, but putting that aside for the moment, we do have some pretty impressive numbers here. So it weighs like 2,645 pounds. It's got a single motor, puts out 650 horsepower, 427 pound-feet of torque, 0 to 60, 2.3 seconds, top speed, 190 miles an hour, battery is 90 kilowatt hours. So that's pretty sizable, but no range figures were given. So I think we could all imagine 300 miles would kind of make sense for that lighter car, that smaller car footprint with that size of battery. Probably more, I don't know, unless super sticky wide tires, we don't know. I feel like the handling, that the lightweight, you know, will help, is what will set this apart from other EV sports cars. But at $350,000, it should be a pretty rare bird if it ever even comes to market. So I don't see any sort of delivery timeline. And to be frank, the Apex website doesn't inspire a ton of confidence, but I don't know. You know, Martin, this company says it designs and builds cars in the UK. Are you familiar with them?
Well, I've never heard of Apex. And this car's been around a couple of years. They sort of seem to have re-presented it with Wyclef, weirdly. Yeah, when you look at their website and it says, we have a 90 kilowatt battery. I don't think they mean that. I mean, it might have 90 kilowatts, in which case it'll be pretty damn slow, or it's got a 90 kilowatt hour battery. Either way, I'm going to be salty and say, come back to me when you know what a kilowatt hour is, and we'll talk about your car.
That is fair, actually. I mean,
I'm sorry to be salty, but it's the basics. Is it? I don't know if this company is just like one rich person's wet dream. I don't know, but I'm taking. I'd come back when you're serious.
Right. There is a video on the internet. I didn't do extensive searching, so I didn't look at for reviews or anything, but I did see, you know, some video of the AP1, which is a combustion car, you know, ripping down a road. But even that one I wasn't impressed by the way the carbon fiber, everything was laid out. For $350,000, it wasn't near the level of, you know, some of the other things I've seen. I'm sorry. Am I being too? Kyle's shaking his head and laughing at me. Am I being too hard on it,
Kyle? No, you're being way too kind. This is just a waste of time.
We've given it too much time already, to be honest. That's ridiculous.
That's what I said. I didn't even wait. They were supposed to unveil it at Amelia, and we were there. And even we were like, wow, we're not going to wait for this to get it in the video. So we just left.
All right. So Larry R says, please stop with the concept cars. Well, this one's not supposed to be a concept because this is supposed to be the production car. So.
But do they know how they're going to produce it? I mean, I guess they did get a car out on the road. I don't know.
They want to build it in the U.S.
But the specs don't seem that good. If you're really going to build like a real attack racer, put two motors in the thing.
I don't know for the weight, though, because that would give it.
Maybe 100 pounds for a motor and axle. Maybe 150 pounds if you do it lightweight.
Right. But I mean, they're already getting 650 horsepower out of the back.
It's not enough. You got to go up against Tesla Roadster. Things got all the million horsepower.
That's true. That would be the prime.
The rocket booster.
Yeah. I mean, if you're going to sell this thing for 350 grand, it's got to have the spec sheet to match it, because no one's going to buy it, at least I think, off of styling or driving feel, because they're not going to let anyone review this thing and review the driving feel. So no one's going to know.
They seem to have let Top Gear review it 2 years ago in a studio with like a static speedo. So this is it in a, you know, in the studio, right. Just like there. But then they've just sort of put, you know, some 134 miles an hour on there, because let's pretend it actually moves. So, yeah. I mean, like Top Gear did it 2 years ago, and someone was obviously persuasive enough to get them to go send a video crew, make a whole video about it, just sitting still in a studio. And this was 2 years ago. So
I don't know. If it ends up working and driving, it could be the car we've all really wanted. But I can't wait to experience it.
I would just have more confidence if it was an outfit like Radical. That's a South African spec racer kind of maker. Small volume, but they've been around for a long time. You know, they have a track record. No pun intended. They have lots of track records, but anyway, so let's move on.
Speaking of which, I was hanging out with the guys from Aerial, you know, like the Aerial Atom.
Oh, yeah.
And they've got a thing called the Aerial Hypercar, H-I-P-E, Hypercar. And it's quite a small battery in that. And I forget who makes the battery pack, but it's someone you would know. Something like Cosworth or someone who's famous for engine. They've got a big battery department, which I never knew about. And that was interesting because that's real and they've made the battery. They've got good partners. It's a good little, interesting little car company making a bonkers EV. Those had like a turbine version thing as well, which I wasn't interested in. But that's interesting to me. That's, you know, because the Ariel Atom is stupid and melts your face, and now here's their electric car, and they were really passionate about it and loved talking to me about that. So I'd rather talk about stuff like that, that, you know, it's not going to be on the road anytime soon, but at least they're a real car company.
Right, I just pulled up a video of it now for some reason, and I haven't really seen, if I have, I've forgotten about it. But this looks pretty cool. Yeah, it's got the same spec, 0 to 62 seconds, super lightweight.
The hypercar.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. It's brilliant. Let me show you a picture. It was so funny to see it.
But that's not all electric, though. No.
And there is an all-electric version, and then there's like a turbine version, and they're just playing around. But stupid and bonkers and brilliant. But they actually sell cars, not this
right.
one. So yeah, I'd rather talk
Transformer.
About... Transformer. Yeah, I'd rather talk about car companies like that. That I don't know how many staff work there. 20, 30, 40. Interesting little boutique car company doing good engineering. I love stuff like that.
Yeah. So yeah, I just have a few other like just little news things from the week here we can talk about. So Tesla started delivery of hardware for equipped vehicles. So that's sort of interesting. I don't know. You have any thoughts about that, Kyle?
Yeah, I mean, this is supposedly a significant hardware upgrade. They have two cameras instead of three up in the windshield. They put a dummy camera in one. So it looks like it has three, but it actually only has two. So I'm not exactly sure how to spot them from the outside yet. I think Model S and X get something in the headlight housing, although that could have just been a rumor. I'm not totally sure if that made it to production. Yeah, I mean, this is really exciting because, you know, hopefully it actually has some redundancy sensors in it as well. Really looking forward to seeing some reviews of it, testing the system, using it, comparing it against my hardware 3 that's in the Model S that I recently got. And yeah, could be a significant upgrade and very much needed.
And previously, Tesla had said that they would upgrade like these computers. You could take in your Plaid, say, and get upgraded to hardware number 4. But I don't think there's an upgrade path to 4 for Tesla vehicles, right?
Well, you know, it wouldn't be the first time they let down owners that they promised, you know, future-proofed upgrades to.
Right.
You know, I don't know. At the end of the day, I get it. It's a significant hardware upgrade, and it probably requires re-architecture of certain things.
Right.
But I think, you know, I've also kind of known that these things aren't going to drive themselves on the old self-driving, you know, hardware that they sold. And we're already, you know, I don't know. We'll have to do more testing. It's too early to tell. But, right. You know, to all the Tesla guys saying like, oh, but you have the old hardware 3. You need hardware 4 to be full self-driving, even though that's what they said when we went from 2 to 2.5 and from 2.5 to 3 and now from 3 to 4. You know, we might be at hardware 52 by the time we get this thing right.
What's interesting is this isn't upgradable, though. So Elon Musk has said, no, it's too different. So you can't get a, because before you've been able to upgrade your Teslas right. and, you know, for a fee. And sometimes it's been complimentary if you've bought FSD, and sometimes you've paid. And I think the price has always been pretty reasonable to get the latest computer so that you can play games or watch YouTube or whatever. But this is entirely different. So it's not.
And that's one of the selling points that Kyle used to pitch me on my getting this used Tesla Model 3. So, don't worry about the full self driving. They'll upgrade your computer free for life.
That's true. I did say that to you because that was always the understanding that, like, you know, you're going to get upgrades, but right. apparently not.
Right. I mean, it's not a big deal for me, but I just want to mention one way you will be able to tell them apart is, the glass on the top is supposed to let in 5 times more light than the existing Model S is now, with the same level of UV protection, and also it'll be a little lighter as well. So, you know, probably a noticeable amount of improvement to handling, but, you know, it's something. And there's also a new ultra red paint for the Model S and Model X.
It looks nice. It's somewhere between multi-coat and the cherry that we get in Europe. So I think that's a nice, I mean, it's difficult. You want to see it in person, don't you, with the sun on it, and, you know, but I think it looks pretty cool. Nice shade.
And while we're talking about this too, so Tesla has just slashed its Model S and X prices yet again by up to $10,000, I believe, on the Model S. So that's getting, well, practically a bargain. I don't know. So that puts the Model S all-wheel drive down to $89,900, which, you know, is a ridiculous amount of money for me. But I mean, compared to that's like a huge step down from where it was, right? It was $94,900. And so the Model X has got the big $10,000 reduction. It was $109,990, $110,000. And now it's $100,000. So that's that.
And Model S and X Plaid are now the same money. Right. And they also upgraded the brake pads for Plaid.
Well, that's good.
I don't know if they did it for long range as well, but they paint the calipers red.
Right.
But all they did was change the pad is what they are saying.
You went and put aftermarket brakes on your Plaid, right?
Yep. So I have aftermarket front and rear brake upgrades.
Much better?
Yeah. And I prefer the black caliper than red personally.
Right. You don't want to show off.
Nope.
It's already, you know, people know it's like...
No one looks at it. It just looks like... I think everyone thinks it's a Model 3, which is great because I don't want anyone to look at it.
All right.
Also, the glass roof being lighter in tint is really nice because you cannot see a thing out of my glass roof. It's really gotten dark over the years. So like we were driving through the Utah canyons recently on the way back from California and we're looking up and like you can barely see on a sunny day. This will be a welcome change. I wonder if it being lighter means worse noise performance. We'll have to test that.
Oh, that's a consideration for sure.
Talking about the sunroof and how light it is, Dom, I bought a sunroof screen for my Model 3.
Okay.
Because it just snaps in. If you think I still have it. If you think you need it, you're down in Florida, it gets really hot this summer. Just let me know. It just snaps right in and it really blocks the sun. You don't get as much radiant heat on your head.
Let me know.
And if you don't want it, then I'll probably just give it to one of the followers. If somebody here has a Model 3 and wants it, send me your address. But Dom gets first dibs on it.
I'm letting you know.
What?
I'm definitely interested in that. Yeah.
All right. Well, I'll ship it to you. Sorry, guys. Sorry, followers. But I just found it. I forgot I had it. It's in my garage. It just snaps right. It has these clips. I found it really useful for me. And for you in Florida, it would be even more. Yeah, it's like two pieces and it snaps right in. I would leave it in the summer.
We had some hot days already. It was kind of like unseasonably hot. It was like 90 degrees last weekend, I believe. We were driving around and my wife was like, we need tint or something because it was too hot in the car. You know, I had to crank the fan up. You know, to 8 or 9, it gets kind of noisy, and you know, this so helps. I need to tint the side windows. But I'm also, you know, anything I can do to cool things down on top might come in handy too when it gets kind of crazy down here.
Anthony C said the top of my head cooks in my Model 3. Get one of those screens, Anthony. They're like $80 on Amazon. They're really, really helpful. It really helped me. Another thing I want to mention about Tesla, and Anthony also pointed this out up in the comment screen. If you remember last week, we talked about my experience up at the Brewster Supercharger and where I met Marquez Brownlee. And Tesla, I think 2 days after we were there, they went and removed all the bollards from that station.
Oh.
So now you can pull, like if I came with my Lightning, I could pull up past the curb and get a little bit closer. Which is interesting. And they weren't old. I noticed like the bollards and everything they had put in there, they just did that like within a year or so. I think everything looked like fresh concrete and everything. So it's interesting that they removed them. And I wonder if they're doing it to other sites. I assume they are. But I thought that was really interesting. It was like 2 days after we did the video, the bollards were gone.
So just for those not sure, a bollard is like those metal posts that have coming up to protect the...
Oh, yeah. Now you can drive it to the supercharger.
From people running into it, which I think is going to happen because, yeah.
Well, these were in between the superchargers. I have to look at the pictures again.
Okay.
They still might have them right on the corners of the superchargers.
Okay.
We've got to get a picture of that. These were bollards in between the superchargers. But honestly, I don't remember if they still had the smaller ones in front of the superchargers. But in any event, they removed them. They pulled them out, and They now, if I were to go, I'd be able to pull up a few inches closer, and that would make the difference. The Lucid actually might be able to nose into a spot and in now, because he couldn't do that when we were there. The Lucid's charge port was just a little bit further back than mine. That's why he had to go to the supercharger all the way to the left. That was like a pull-in supercharger. And he might be able to get pull-in enough to fit now. But again, you're blocking. You're in the stall that you're not supposed to be using. You're in the stall to the right of the supercharger. That supercharger is meant to use the stall to the left. So you're still taking up two supercharger stalls if you're plugging in there.
I'm kind of impressed by that. More than I should be. Like, I want someone to write a management book about Tesla that doesn't focus on Elon Musk, or maybe that's the culture he's created.
How quickly they're able to do this, you mean?
Just anything. Remove it? Anything. Like, someone at Tesla might have seen Marquez's video and gone, we should remove the bollards. And rather than a normal company, I've worked in so many companies where that would have been, you know, sent around a few Slack messages. Let's put a meeting in next week and have, and someone has got a ground worker in a truck there and removed them because it's the right thing to do. Like, obviously the line of approval or just signing these things off to get the budget or whatever to say, take them out. Like, whoever's in charge of the supercharger, like that chain of command, whether it's lean or whatever. I want someone to write a book about how Tesla moves quickly. I was also reading on a Mexican website this week, the first delegation of like 40 people turned up to meet with the new president's people and office, and to talk about groundbreaking next week and how they want the Mexican factory open within a year. And right. It's like they're talking about how the site is difficult, I think, from a terrain perspective. But hang on, it was announced 5 minutes ago, and now they're talking about, right, well, let's get the bulldozers in and the diggers, and we'll start clearing that land. Not in 3 months' time, but, like, can you call someone now? Like, it's just... I'm more impressed than I should be. I'll shut up now. Oh, by the way, I also want to point out that I follow on Twitter a brilliant... if anyone doesn't know what a bollard is, a brilliant Twitter account called the World Bollard Association.
Yes!
Please go and follow this, because it's just videos of bollards wrecking cars, vans, people not waiting for the bollard to lower.
Sometimes they go up and down. They don't really go up and down in oil, America.
What else? Bollards eating cars. Honestly, bollards are indestructible. Like, there you go. There's a BMW broken by a bollard. I love it. Sorry. I like this account far more than I should do.
I don't even know what to say after that, Martin, but okay.
Bollards, just brilliant.
This is a great Twitter account. I love it.
Go and follow, and they're going to come up, right? There you go. Oh, it's wrecked the Renault. Yeah. It's just bollards wrecking cars, which...
That's why they don't go up and down here in the U.S. because it would just be a massacre.
Yeah, I can't think of many other than at government buildings where we have these walls that come up. But we don't really have the posts that come up like they have in Europe.
Oh, we have them everywhere to stop people driving down roads they shouldn't be on.
And... So many BMWs stuck on bollards, by the way. Don't know what that says about BMW drivers.
Right. Like, oh, it's a thing of beauty. Look at that. It's a beautiful. Look at that. What a bollard. Anyway, sorry, Dom.
All right. So we're about out of time, but I just wanted to mention, this came up on Inside EVs this morning, that the Volkswagen is going to preview a new electric car on March 15th. Is it the ID2? We ask in the question, in the headline, which, whatever. Probably yes. We have a little sketch of it here. So the 15th, we don't know. I kind of suspect that's not coming to the U.S., because the ID3 is a small hatch, which doesn't come to the U.S., which is sad. So this may not either. But, you know, I don't know. Let's be hopeful anyway, because I think we need more small cars. If they're good, I think if they're good and offer a good value, people will buy them. You know, people buy all kinds of, like, you know, the Kia Rio back in the day when they were dirt cheap. Why not? You know, so give it the proper value. I don't know. Maybe I'm just talking to the walls. But all right.
Another BMW. And, I mean, they've blurred out the badge, but you know what it is.
All right.
So I just want to know how many BMWs have been eaten by those things. It's got to be thousands.
It must be.
So I guess that brings us to the end of our Bollard show.
I think it should.
If you have any questions or comments, you can leave them on the Inside EVs forum podcast thread or on the YouTube or Twitch comment sections. If you like the show, or if you didn't like the show, please give us a thumbs up. If you're watching us on YouTube, we appreciate all the thumbs up we can get. And don't forget, you can find and follow our panelists on Twitter. Follow Tom Logney at Tomolog. That's with two M's. Martin Lee is at EV News Daily. Kyle Connor is at It's Kyle Connor. I am not on Twitter. I'm at Dominic on Post News and Mastodon and Spoutable. So click the
question though, are those platforms picking up? Should we get on those platforms?
I mean, Spoutable, I think, is the newest one. It's got a little over 100,000 users right now. So I think it's still early for them. Yeah. Post, I think Mastodon is really the more popular, most popular so far. And you use the electric vehicles hashtag, you can get more eyes on it. But it's still, you know, Twitter's still, you're going to get more eyes on Twitter.
Okay.
For sure. Yeah. But yeah. So click subscribe on our channel here and tap that bell icon for notifications. Thank you all very much for joining us. We really appreciate our audience here and your comments, live comments. We love it. We'll see you all again next week. Ciao.
That's great.